Let's go! Huge injury news with John Emery, plus a shocking stock up, stock down report. Who for LSU is actually up and going to take our team to the next level? You're about to figure it out right now. Let's go.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get the power, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get the power, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power.
LSU with Carter. The hits keep coming after an unfreaking believably tough 48 hours. John Emery out for the season, a report broken earlier today by Wilson Alexander of The Advocate. This was not an injury that happened during the game, but it did happen at practice. Now, there are going to be so many theories as to why this injury happened. Did LSU rush him back too quickly? The way I understand it is this ACL injury happened on the other leg. And ironically, this might actually end up being better for him in the long term, because there are some people out there that believe you need to, and this is just a theory, but I do believe sometimes it's better to tear both ACLs so both legs are even, right? That's always been a galaxy brain thought. I'm not a doctor. I know quite a few, but I've never talked to a doctor about this. But I believe there was a famous NFL running back. He was one of the few that was able to overcome an ACL injury, and it's because he tore both of them. Or at least I've seen that theory before. But either way, it sucks for John Emery in the short term, because he was going to be more than likely LSU's lead back moving forward, because versus USC, he was the best back. And I'm not just saying that because he had the best statistical day. It did seem he had a little bit more juice than Josh Williams and, of course, Caleb Jackson. Now, do I think LSU will still be fine at the running back position? I don't know. Is Caden Durham ready to go? I do think Caden Durham is still someone that could play as a true freshman, but this was a fall enrollee, so it is going to be difficult for him to get up to speed on everything, but I do think he is still talented enough to play. And then, of course, you have one other massive domino here, which is Trey Holly. And this has honestly been the most popular question that's been asked of me. Could you move Harold Perkins back to running back? Obviously, he has played some running back, and Joe Sloan himself gave Harold Perkins a carry last year, of course, in the bowl game in which he scored. Now, for those that aren't familiar, Harold Perkins had, well, his running back tape in high school was phenomenal. It really, really, really was. So, could he play some running back? I don't know. But at this point, LSU's going to roll, obviously, with Caleb Jackson, Josh Williams, and of course, Caden Durham. And now that we know John Emery's going to be out, I do expect to see Caden Durham quite a bit in this game versus Nichols over the weekend, because LSU quite simply needs him to play. I don't think this is a situation where you might have not thought he was ready and you were kind of in the middle about redshirting him or not. I think at this point, you just got to play him and see what you can work with. And obviously, you know, coaches always have conversations with players about their future. If they were thinking going the redshirt route, you should go to Caden and say, well, we need you right now for this team. So John Emery out for the year. He's obviously a guy that's been through a lot with the academic issues, missing a full season because of that. You know, he's had all kinds of injury nick up situations over the past couple of years where, you know, you just get nicked up, right? You got a sprained ankle, you hammy, whatever the case may be. And then last year, of course, the Florida juke is still one of the best jukes I've ever seen any LSU running back pull off. And it was so good that you know, his own body couldn't take it. And then now he had the injury happen in practice. John looked really good versus USC. He looked really, really, really good. And after the USC game, I felt he was going to have like a Nicholas Brissett type of season where he's not a special back, but he's good enough to lead your team in rushing and good enough to get you to a 10-win type of season. So, you know, you see the poll question. Do you think this is a big loss for LSU? I don't think it's necessarily seismic because I'm not going to just fall off a cliff with Caleb Jackson and Josh Williams after just one game. But your running back room is already dangerously thin. And of course, you know, over the past few seasons, LSU has had running back rooms of six players and eight players. And now you're down to three scholarship players. So there you go. Now, Blue Fetty says, I feel for John, man. He worked his ass off to get back on the field. Kevin, we'll get to that topic in just for a second. Chance says year seven for Emory is his lucky number. Does he get another year of eligibility? I could see him getting a true injury redshirt eligibility type of situation. Hell, Miami had a tight end who was a year nine player that scored a touchdown this past weekend, which I still think it's absolutely ridiculous. So I believe you should have 6 years max. Seven is really pushing it, but sure. Let's bring John Emery back for another season. I'm open. I like John, obviously. And what's interesting is if we actually went back, it would not shock me if John Emery's been the most talked about player on this channel because, you know, it's always just been one hurdle after the other. So I still believe in this LSU running back room. I appreciate Taylor Martirana. I've talked to him on Instagram a few times. He is one of the best college sports documentarians you can see. I love Josh Williams, but he didn't seem to be running as tough as usual against USC. Any chance he's not 100%. So Josh has a lot of tread off the tires, right? In terms of years, but not necessarily in terms of carries, right? He doesn't have a whole lot of these 20 or 30 carry games. And there's never really a situation where you worry in college about a running back being too old, like in the NFL, right? Your age cliff when it comes to a running back really doesn't happen until you're 27, 28, 29. So John is definitely healthy enough to still be good and definitely has enough juice. But as a year six player, you know, there was never really like a ridiculous upside case for Josh Williams, right? He's never going to be like 12,000 yard or even 1,000 yard guy, but he is definitely solid enough to, like John Emery, lead your team to a 10-win record. Now, did Josh have his best game this past weekend? No. But was he run blocking really poor? Absolutely. Was he run play call selection poor? Abso-freaking-lutely. And what I think happened, you know, the third and one run was actually really good where he was able to squeeze through and he only had one person to beat for an even longer run. But that was a really good short yardage run. John is a really, really good short yardage back. And, well, you know, he's also your number 18. So he's going to continue to play. He's very reliable in pass protection. And I do still believe in Josh Williams moving forward. Once again, he's not going to make you think he's Clyde Edwards-Helaire or anyone truly special. But there are times when he has Clyde Edwards-Helaire type of moment. So I think Josh and Caleb is still plenty enough to go out there and win you games. But I also think it's time to come back down to reality with both of those guys. Because up to this point, you know, Josh has had a few of these types of big time rushing games. But Caleb Jackson really hasn't had that one breakout game. So you are kind of concerned about your running back room moving forward, especially knowing that the best of the three this past weekend is the one that is gone for the year. So we'll see what happens moving forward. Now, every Wednesday live stream at 6 p.m. Central, we're going to do a stock up and stock down report. And it is brought to you by our friends at Zion Imaging Booth. Book your 360 booth experience today with Zion Imaging and ZionImaging.com. That's X-Y-A-N Imaging. And check them out on Facebook where you can get up to 40% off your booking. Okay, let's start with LSU player stock up from the USC game, and we will begin on the defensive side of the football. And before we do that, let's follow up here with Taylor in his super chat. I felt like 2 years ago he was phenomenal in those short yardage situations and was never going down on first contact. Didn't know if he had some kind of lingering injury. Yeah, there's always been these lingering type of things with Josh dating back to the bowl game versus Purdue where they just sat him out completely. But I do think Josh will be healthy for the rest of the season. And maybe he's going through something. It didn't look like he was a gazillion percent on his rushes, but I do think he's fine. Otherwise, LSU is really in some trouble if he's also hurt. Now, let's start at the defensive side of the football. LSU player stock up from the USC game. Ashton Stamps has not only been the best defensive back during LSU fall camp, he followed that up with quite literally one of the best cornerback performances we've seen in quite some time. And what makes it even more impressive with what he did, he is only a year two, three-star recruit, right? This was a guy who trained at DPT NOLA. This was a guy who was extremely competitive, went up against Justin Jefferson in some training situations. He is a fearless, fearless guy who earned his LSU offer from really being competitive at LSU camp settings. So, you know, for me, with Ashton Stamps, I do my own independent grades on every player. I didn't really have that high grade on him. I thought he was going to be a potential good year two or year three guy, but he's already the number uno, and he's already proven himself to be the best player on LSU's defense, at least after week one. Pro Football Focus actually agreed with me on that front. Now, the next two were players that PFF didn't grade that highly, and that's J.O. Paez and Savion Jones. Paez was a lot better on my first rewatch of the game, but it got even better on the second rewatch of the game, where J.O. Paez just was slippery. He was unblockable. He was very active. He chased plays down from behind. I really, really enjoyed watching J.O. Paez get in there and actually make plays, actually go out there and make tackles. So was it a perfect game? No. Once again, J.O. Paez is kind of like Josh Williams, one of these year six kind of guys who honestly wasn't really a big-time recruit or anything like that, but they worked their tails off, and you know you're going to get something. It might not be, you know, an unfreaking believably high ceiling like a Mekhi Wingo, but he's got the chance to continue to get better. And one thing I like about J.O. Paez is his scheme versatility. Coming into the season, he has played the zero tech nose and the three-man front. He's also been, you know, just your traditional three-technique defensive tackle in previous games. So you can see his maturity. You can also see his age, his size, football IQ, all those different things. He really understands the nuances of defensive tackle play. And like I said, you know, when I did the initial film study on him, I was kind of in the middle. I thought he was, like, okay when I watched him. I didn't think he was anything spectacular, but I did think he would more than likely start, and I did think he could be a decent option for you. But now, after this USC game, I'm starting to think he can be potentially even better than that. And then we get to Savion Jones, who I still have no idea what Pro Football Focus was looking at. I know they're more play-by-play efficiency kind of things, and I understand that Savion Jones can have some brutal reps from time to time and get a little upright and a little stiff. But the truth is, Savion Jones, if we would have pulled off this game, we would be talking more about what this guy did at defensive end for LSU. I have not seen really anyone since the B.J. Ojulari era be a consistent bender around the edge. Last year, Braden Swinson did pretty good in some areas like that, but I was really impressed with Savion Jones. And it goes back, you know, a few weeks ago when Garrett Nussmeier had a really deep pass in a practice setting. Savion Jones really showed me something when he showed a counter spin move as a part of his pass rush arsenal. And you got to give Kevin Peoples, the defensive ends coach, a lot of credit. You could see he made a difference in his game. So Savion Jones, definitely, with the two sacks, almost forced a fumble, almost had a diving interception. The guy was so freaking active, hands in the passing lane, never really gave up on plays. I love me some Savion Jones. And I've been critical of Savion Jones in the past. I have. Last year was a really tough year. But at the spring game, I got to meet his mother, sat next to his mother, actually saw his mother at the game this past weekend. And I was constantly being told how much better he got, in particular this last fall camp. It was seen by some of the media, but also sometimes behind closed doors. Xavien Jones had started beating Will Campbell and Emory Jones. So this is a guy that's going to move up draft boards as well. And at the same time, Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl tweeted out how much he was impressed with Xavien Jones. So big number 35 definitely deserves his flowers, and he needs to continue on this train of success. Now, we go to the LSU three players stock up, and all three of these were controversial outside of John Emery. Okay, John Emery's pretty clear stock up. I'm going to give DJ Chester a stock up. It's kind of hard to give the offensive line any type of stock up when, you know, you got pushed around as much as you did. We can get into play calling and all of that, but if Will Campbell was sitting right here, he would say no excuses. Part of why I give DJ Chester a stock up is there really wasn't a bad snap in this game. I love seeing centers who can get a snap off, especially in a shotgun offense like LSU likes to run. So I give DJ Chester a lot of credit there. Yes, the fourth down stop on fourth and three, we never want to give up a gap pressure. I don't know who that was on. That would require, obviously, asking Brad Davis or Chester himself. They're really only some of the few people on the planet that can answer that. So that's obviously not good. We never want that to happen. And it's honestly inexcusable on a fourth down play coming out of a timeout. But, you know, DJ Chester, you know, I didn't think he was, you know, the next PJ Lonergan or Alan Faneca out there. But in his first full game as a starter, not really much run as in competitive situations outside of the Missouri game last year, I liked what I saw overall with DJ Chester. Hopefully that performance continues. And then we get to one that I'm getting destroyed on Twitter about, which is Kamarion Pinton. Okay. I thought Kamarion Pinton had a really good game. And, you know, you could see my mentions right there. I got two I haven't responded to yet. Kamarion Pinton, everyone's talking about the blocks that he missed. All right. He missed two blocks, y'all. He missed two blocks. The first was really ugly, and it's gone viral, where he got put on his ass when he was pulling, okay? Let me start by saying that I have also been critical of Kamarion Pinton and his blocking, but I also told you that going into his career. He was one of the highest-graded players in this last recruiting class, or two recruiting classes ago, and I said my biggest concern is his blocking. And quite frankly, it was not good in practice last year, and it wasn't good in game, so we really couldn't play him. To see him block better in practice based on sources who are actually there every single day, and then also see him execute every other block outside of these two plays is a step forward. That's why it's called stock up. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Kamarion Pinton is the next freaking George Kittle when it comes to blocking, but he missed two blocks, all right? The first was when he pulled around and got put on his ass. Really, there wasn't a whole lot he can do about it. The linebacker keyed on the pull and was running full speed downhill, and Kamarion Pinton got ran into because the right side of our offensive line got caved in, and that slowed down his momentum going towards him, and that's why he got put on his ass. It still shouldn't happen. It doesn't look good. It went viral on Twitter. So be it. That's going to happen, especially if you're 6'6" and you're not really a blocking tight end. The second missed block was on the worst play call I've ever seen, the third and two, or the third and one that ended up being a fourth and two in the fourth quarter. A lot of you remember that, the John Emery handoff to the left side. Yes, Kamarion Pinton blew his block. And I do know that it really hurt him that he blew that block. Okay, I get it. It hurts everybody's feelings when you see someone get beat that bad. But folks, I'm telling you right now, that would have been a difficult block for George Kittle to make because the guy was slanting so hard to the inside that if he is guessing that's where the play is going and he is right about it, it is near impossible to get that block off. Now, could Pinton still have gotten it off? Yes, it would have been extremely difficult. But outside of that, he had some absolutely fantastic blocks in that game. He also got his first competitive real catch in a tight game situation, which is a good step forward. And I do feel our run game was better when we were in 12 personnel. So it is a step forward in the right direction for me. Yes, the PFF grades don't necessarily show that for Pinton, but to me, it was good enough for me, especially when you factor in the guy was terrible in this aspect of his game, and he really worked his ass off to get to where we can play him to the point where a true sophomore in Mac Markway, who was a decent player for LSU, said, I can't compete with this. He packed his bags and quit. So I'm going to praise Kamarion Pinton. Yeah, there were some ugly viral reps, but man, I think he's still extremely talented, and I think he's only going to get better as a player. He's not going to be Brock Bowers after the catch. He's not going to be the next Rob Gronkowski as a complete tight end blocker, but that's why I have Mason Taylor to do a lot of that. So I truly do believe in Pinton taking a step forward. And then we get to the special team step forwards, but before we do that, let's talk to Jackson Carney, my dear beloved EPL fan. I know he saw my dear beloved Liverpool take it to Man United 3-0. Carney says, I'm depressed, Carter. No killer instinct. BK ain't it. We're a national punchline yet again. Honestly, you're right on the money. We don't have a killer instinct. We don't. Some of it, when it comes down to killer instinct, comes down to having play calls you know work in crunch time, right? We talked about this in the film study. For USC to really get one of their final drives going, they ran the play that everyone runs that is nearly unstoppable, which is these tight end leak plays, right? If you have new linebackers and Harold Perkins is still getting used to the position working alongside Greg Penn, those plays are brutal to stop, right? Tight ends that just leak out. They start off looking like they're blocking, but then they leak out, and it's really hard to guard. We just could not stop that, right? And there were some critical, critical gains that they got on that late in the game. And it wasn't for anything like crazy because, you know, we're only going to remember the Jacoby Lane catch and the, you know, the Hudson catch and a few plays from Branch. But those tight end receptions were really tough. And that's because Lincoln Riley saved those play calls for later in the game, right? And look, we had an opportunity to take a touchdown lead, and Garrett Nussmeier missed an easy throw to Aaron Anderson. And we just couldn't get it done. Our play calling was not great in the fourth quarter offensively. And quite frankly, it could have been better defensively as well. You know, I think Whitweek should have played more towards the end, but it is what it is. Is BK not it? Well, I'll tell you this. I'm tired of seeing the team losing games because of clear coaching mistakes. Obviously, the first game of the Brian Kelly era was his worst coach game probably ever. And, you know, I know that sounds like hyperbole. It was his very first game, and I've been very defensive in how bad we were coached and how bad we executed in that game. But it still, it is what it is. And then obviously in this last game in 2022, I'm very defensive of LSU again because that Florida State team was so freaking good. I mean, in 2023, excuse me, last year. But, you know, we still got our asses kicked, even though we were winning by 3 at halftime. And then once again, in the second half of this game, we were out-executed, out-coached in every shape, form, and fashion. So it's an issue. It's an issue. Brian Kelly and these openers have been an issue. And I've gotten some very angry messages about, well, Carter, we shouldn't be ducking openers. It is what it is at this point. The great teams have won difficult openers like 2011 LSU and so on and so on. But when you do even, you know, widen the lens even more, there are quite a few openers LSU has just never played well in, even in the Miles era, right? Houston was an amazing comeback. The Wisconsin game that was played in Houston was a miraculous comeback. And the only reason we won that game is because they stopped feeding the ball to Melvin Gordon. And then what was the other one that we played terrible? Oh, yeah, we lost to that Green Bay game in Wisconsin where we played like ass. So, you know, I don't think it's an LSU thing per se, but I just think it's dumb to play difficult season openers when every game counts so much. And in the portal era, all these new players are in. Get a tune-up game because obviously we can't win these big games, all right? But the truth is, we are a punchline because it is 3 consecutive years we have lost this primetime Sunday game. Once again, these primetime Sunday night games on the Labor Day college football weekend, there's nothing else going on. There's no NFL. There's no other college games. All 3 years, teams have watched us get beat, or our fans have watched us get beat. And it's once again because we just couldn't get it done towards the end. Garrett Nussmeier played fantastic. Kyron Lacy played fantastic. Whit Weeks, Xavien Jones, who we've already mentioned, played fantastic. We have got to be able to close out games. We just do. And for the most part, we have had good close game luck. But I'll also say this about the USC game. Lots of bad luck went against us. So we'll see. Now, let's get to the final two players, stock forward. Aaron Burrell might have been the most dominant player for LSU. All his kicks went out of the back of the end zone. The only one that didn't was the Kyron Lacy penalty, and he made the best form tackle I've ever seen from any LSU special teamer. Shout out to Aaron Burrell. And Damian Ramos was great yet again, okay? The last field goal was very underrated. Go watch a film study. The laces were not in the right direction, and that could really screw you up, especially in a crunch time kick, and he still nailed it. So shout out to him. Shout out to Slade Roy. LSU special teams was really good, if you ask me, and they were a shoestring tackle away from a kickoff return for a touchdown. So I understand Slade Nagel gets the credit because he is the special teams coach, but there's others, right? Bob Diaco is definitely someone that's involved in it. There's also plenty of other analysts, position coaches that also have their hand in it as well. But look, those are my stock ups, okay? Now, stock down. Obviously, if some stocks go up, some have to go down, right? Well, that's not necessarily true because, well, it's football. If everyone plays well, everyone's stock goes up, right? It's not a zero-sum thing, my stock up and stock down reports. As far as stock down is concerned, yeah, there were some players who we thought could have played better, and they didn't quite show up and play at the level that we thought that they could have played. But there was one player who I would consider to be a superstar who had a dreadful game, downright dreadful game. I won't say who it is publicly, and that's why we have the PHL Patreon. Go to patreon.com/LSU football. You can hear my full thoughts on, and if this is salvageable, I do think it is, but go to patreon.com/LSU football. You can hear my full podcast on this very topic, and every new patron gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail. We actually got a sign up earlier today. Let me see. Patreon.com/LSU football. I want to show him some love. And that is Danny. Danielle, I really appreciate that, man. So, patreon.com/LSU football. And you'll learn who that is. Now, a few other players that I felt had some rough moments. Obviously, it wasn't Will Campbell's best game. But when you really break down the actual plays where he wasn't committing a false start penalty, he did some phenomenal things in that game. He really did. So I'm not worried necessarily about the LSU offensive line moving forward. Did we overvalue this unit? Maybe a little going into the season. We'll see how they rebound after a tough performance versus Nichols. Now, are there any other things and players that I felt were stock down or were a little disappointing? You know, I thought Parashan did a few good things in this game as well. So there you go. Let's go to AP here. All right. I'm actually glad you brought this up, AP. And obviously, AP, you've been one of my biggest financial supporters with Super Chats and all of that in the past. Thank you so much. I appreciate your continuous support. What pisses me off the most is not deferring the ball. The team who scores first usually wins, then he doesn't take the 3 points. Okay. So let's talk about the layers of this. And this is actually my fault, AP, because I actually wanted to get into this last night. And you guys know that there's nothing more I love discussing than actual football and actual game management, okay? All this other stuff, you know, it's there's every single story that's out now. You know, the governor wants to bring the Tiger back in the stadium and all this stuff. I just care about winning football games, right? I think we all can agree. We just want to win football games. So here's what we're going to do, okay? I'm going to go try and find the clip where Brian Kelly answered a question yesterday about this, okay? Once again, my press conference audio actually got screwed up yesterday. So we'll take a small break, but I really want you to think about deferring the football to the second half, okay? That's coming up right after this.
Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. Book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's XYANImaging.com.
Ward, but just could you expand on your philosophy of when you win the toss, taking it first, and then staying aggressive and going for it on fourth down when you have a chance?
Yeah. So, you know, part of it obviously is the analytics play a role in it. So going for it on, fourth and three, the analytics gave us a high percentage there of scoring a touchdown. So that was one of the reasons there for going for it. In terms of receiving the kickoff, that is a personal preference of scoring first. The team that scores first has a higher percentage of winning games. So I've always carried that philosophy with me throughout my career of wanting to go on offense first. Now, I know a lot of people want to defer, get the ball in the third quarter, and I totally understand that. And there's certain situations that I would do that in wanting to put our defense on the field first. But I felt like our offense was the group that I wanted to see first, and so that's why we made that decision. Certain situations that offense first. Now, I know a lot of people want to defer, get the ball in the third quarter.
All right. So I want to push back on a few things Brian Kelly just said, okay? The first, and it's a very good question from AP. Whoever scores first wins more often than not. Okay. Well, I think that could be a little bit, I'm not as fancy with the analytical confirmation, logic, bias, whatever. Here's the issue I have with that. Okay. Scoring first doesn't always mean that you're scoring on the opening drive, right? That data or that stat that he has, unless he has it calibrated for whoever scores first, whether or not they receive or not. The truth is, of course, scoring first is going to show that you're more often than not going to win because, well, if you score first, you're already up 3 or 7 or 6 theoretical points, maybe sometimes 8 or 2, whatever the case may be. But scoring first doesn't equal taking the ball first, if that makes sense. What does the data say as far as how often does a team that score first is a team that is the first to receive the football? I would like to think that it is a team that receives the football first that ends up scoring first, but I'm not so sure if that's the case. I don't have that data in front of me. But if, and once again, Brian Kelly is very analytically sound. If you're just looking at a stat, though, if it's just saying, hey, whoever scores first wins the game more often, then, you know, that's a flawed logic argument, if you get what I'm saying, if you decide that you want to receive the football first. Now, I understand Brian Kelly was very high on his LSU offense, and they did indeed drive down the field and almost score. But the second thing is, if you're so hung up on just scoring first, then that would lead you to believe that he would be more apt to take the 3 points, right? And look, I do agree that the analytics, when it comes to anything fourth and goal, 5 or less, it's always going to say go for the touchdown, right? Because a field goal is only worth 3 points. 2 field goals doesn't equal 1 touchdown and an extra point. And the analytics are also factoring in how many more times are you going to be able to drive down and get that close and actually score? And the answer is fewer than you might think. So I get that the analytics there tell you to go for it. There are a few things, though, that I disagreed with him there. He said it was 4th and 3 from the goal line. Well, first off, 4th and 3 is different than 4th and goal, right? 4th and 3 is easier to obtain than 4th and goal, right? Defensively, you don't have to worry about getting beat over the top if it's 4th and 3, let's say from your own 40 or their 40 or wherever. And the second thing is that is a little misleading, 4th and 3. It wasn't 4th and 3. It was 4th and a long 3, right? The ball was actually closer to the 4-yard line than it was the 3-yard line. So in theory, it was actually 4th and 3.5. And that does really matter when it comes to this situation. Also, 4th and 3s from the goal line, or just 3rd and goals from the 3, you know, I would guess that that probably gets completed a little less than 50% of the time. So I would say probably last year, and this is just me spitballing, I would guess that that's probably a 35 to 40% chance of happening. The issue I also have with that is one play that has really been fruitful for LSU over the past few years on these 4th and goal situations is just Jaden's ability to run, right? You look at the greatest offense of all time, LSU 2019. You look at a lot of 4th and 5 or shorter and goal situations, so many of those were Joe Burrow QB draws, right? 1 versus Clemson, 1 versus Auburn. The QB run game is so big to me on 4th down. We just don't have that, right? So the more I've thought about it, the more I have leaned towards taking the 3, even though overall I'm aggressive. Now, another thing I truly do believe happened is when LSU went for it on 4th and 3, it dissuaded them later in the game to really go for it in more advantageous situations. You know, to start the half, the first possession of the 3rd quarter, the C.J. Daniels stretch where it was 4th and inches, LSU decided to not go for it. I think in that situation, you do have to go. If it's 4th and inches, you should go every time. I don't really care where it is on the field. It just depends on where the ball was spotted. I do believe it was about a 4th and 1 or so. And then the 4th down decision to punt after the play that Joe Sloan called yesterday that I've flamed, you know, plenty times enough already, I think you still have to go for it there. On 4th and 2 or shorter, I'm still down for going for it, especially against a good USC offense. But I also understand the other side of it, where your defense had been playing really good up to that point in that half. And you know, they were. You know, the 3rd quarter, the LSU defense dominated. So I truly do believe they should have gone for it later in the game. And I don't know why we didn't stay aggressive in the 4th down department. I am of the belief that if I was a head coach, I would just go for it almost every time. Like, especially considering, you know, your punt game is still kind of raw. You know, we had some good punts. I thought Ochsendorf's going to be pretty good for LSU this year. I get it. But another thing that goes into that decision for me and not going for it is USC's punt game is so good. Right, their punt return game is so good. So, you know, I understand Zachariah Branch didn't have a big punt return versus us in this game, But that would also further dissuade me from punting the football away, because I don't want anything to do with punting the football in this direction, even if it is a rugby style punt where you can't really return it at all. So, you know, I don't think it's semantics, because fourth and goal from the three is completely different than fourth and three anywhere else in the field, right? I would venture off to say that fourth and threes anywhere off on anywhere else on the field get completed more than fourth and three from a fourth and goal situation, if that makes sense, right? Because it's just harder to convert in the very compressed red zone part. Now, I do push back here on how always take the points. Well, I don't agree with that. I just don't. Like, I think there's so many other contextual factors that go into it. You know, I think one other reason why Brian Kelly felt pretty good about going for it there was LSU had to burn a timeout because Kyle Parker was hurt, right? And he was slow to get off the field, and there was almost going to be a delay game, which is why if you're hurt, you should always just fall to the ground, right? Unless it's the final 2 minutes of the first half or second half, okay? So there you go. We say hi to 4K Trey on Twitter. Can't wait to win our Dynasty League. I'm proud of our defense, period. Last year, we were terrible. This year, we've been better. Jared, as always, thank you for your super chat. And on top of that, thank you for your friendship. Spent a lot of time with Jared this weekend and all his friends and family. I say all his friends and family. One of his friends. Oh, yeah, hell no. It's all good, man. That's a point. That's the beauty of it. Now, this is something else I'll say. All right. I'm really getting, you know, attacked on Twitter for saying Kamarion Pipton to stock up, missed two very difficult blocks, and apparently had the worst game ever. I thought he played pretty well. I'll always say this as well when it comes to being critical of players, right? I'm fine with it. This is why this channel is here, right? But there is a level of respect, right? Like there is, you have to do so with some decency. Like I don't care if you come on here and say, well, Sage Ryan isn't good. And that's fine, right? There's a big piece of me that agrees with you on that. But I don't want people coming on here saying, well, this dude's a bum. I hate that word. Bum should be saved for actual bumps, okay? And you know, I just look, once again, I don't want anyone to be afraid of saying whatever when it comes to LSU football. It's the point of this. I want this to be for the most part a really safe free speech kind of place. But you guys know what I'm talking about. You guys know when it comes to crossing the line, you really do need to be careful, because look, one thing that was not shocking to me at all, but it is something. Before the game, I spoke to a lot of players' parents, and they say that they watch. So, you know, imagine if that was your kid. So I try to be respectful when it comes to saying that this player didn't play well or whatever. But just keep that in mind. Because on Twitter, someone, you know, talking about people are soft or whatever, and it's just like, I don't think I can go that far. Now, if you say the offensive line collectively was soft, I would agree with that. In a lot of ways, right? But don't try and get too personal, okay? Now, this is something that I want to get into. Trey, I appreciate your friendship. Look, what do you do about Harold Perkins? He had the phenomenal play that was otherworldly, timing the blitz to absolute perfection. But outside of that, we really didn't have a whole lot of Perk plays, okay? So, let's first take a look at Harold Perkins' career, and let's try our best to figure out the best way to use him, okay? So 2022 happened, and Harold Perkins was phenomenal. And you know, there's people wondering if he's not first-team All-American like right now. And his best game came versus quarterbacks that are not even starting at non-Power 5. So the Arkansas game had a lot to do with Harold Perkins being special, but also them not having KJ Jefferson in that game. Obviously, the Alabama game that year from Harold Perkins was phenomenal. The Mississippi State game that year, phenomenal. The Ole Miss game, phenomenal. And they used him in many different exotic ways, okay? And then last year, it was just a mess where they played him as a nickel corner or, you know, just your traditional, you know, strong side linebacker or whatever. But, you know, I truly do believe that Harold Perkins can still be a very good defensive player for LSU. But I also think there is a piece of me that wonders, well, you know, maybe running back is better for him. Because now we're to the point where how many special Perk games have there been over the past year and a half, or last year's games and now this one game here? And the answer to that is, well, Missouri game was really special. There were some other good games that he had last year as well, but nothing like truly spectacular. And, you know, it does make you wonder if this is even the right side of the football for him. I am not ready to bail on him, though, as the off-ball green dot linebacker and leader of this defense. I do think, though, there's going to need to be discussions about him getting us lined up, getting us in the right spot, and him playing within the structure of the defense. Because, look, he wants to be aggressive. He wants to go down there and make plays, and that's what we want him to do. But the down-to-down consistency of being an inside linebacker is tough to adjust. We all know he's the most talented player on this defense. I don't think anyone would disagree with that in terms of just raw playmaking ability. We've not seen anyone do what he did as a true freshman season since that happened. But we'll see. We'll see how it grows. Because there's some of you that say, well, should we have Harold Perkins and Whit Weeks start? Or should it be Whit Weeks and Greg Penn, and then Harold Perkins be used as kind of like a rover nickel like he did last year, or use him more as an end or whatever? There's a lot of what should we do, what should we do with Perk questions that are out there. The issue, though, is you've got to stick with what you have now, because, well, what you had now was a really good performance versus USC until the fourth quarter where Miller Moss went off on you. So, look, I'm still in on Harold Perkins being the off-ball linebacker next to Greg Penn, but I do think there needs to be questions about what is best for this defense moving forward, okay? So it's tough. Look, I will tell you this, okay? If you are like Harold Perkins, and a lot of your instincts are to tell you, go make plays, go make plays, go make plays, then it's hard to be an off-ball linebacker, right? If you actually watch the best off-ball linebackers of all time, okay? Yeah, you have guys like Ray Lewis who were ridiculous at flying downhill and making ridiculous plays. And yes, he had guys like Tony Siragusa in front of him that made his life easier. But the truth is, a lot of linebacker play is patience, right? You've got to let plays develop as much as running backs have to let blocks develop, right? If you ever go watch a guy like Luke Kuechly, you know, a lot of his best plays aren't him just running downhill and blowing guys up. It's him in like ridiculous pass coverage. It's him reading plays, taking perfect angles, and so on and so on. Patrick Willis, name whoever, those guys were unfreaking believably patient. And then when it was time to pounce, it was time to pounce. So it's tough. It's a tough position to play, especially now, especially when you're going up against good play callers like Lincoln Riley. And one thing where I'll defend Harold Perkins, this is the second consecutive year, this time with a new defensive coordinator, where you went up against one of the best play callers in the sport. So it's tough, right? It's really, really, really tough. But I'm fine with rolling with Greg Penn and Harold Perkins as we move forward. Okay. So here's what we're going to do. In the next 10 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. Tomorrow night, we will go live at 5 p.m. Central. Okay. 5 p.m. Central, we will be live. Okay. I kind of want to do a 2-hour one. I kind of want to be the Thursday night live streams to 6 p.m. Central, but we're going to try 5 p.m. Central tomorrow for Thursday night's live stream. If that's okay with you, type Y for yes, type N for no if you're okay with that. I know a lot of you want to watch the NFL kickoff tomorrow. I do too, because if it's Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes, I want to watch it as well. And I have some other obligations tomorrow night as well. So we'll start tomorrow at 5, and I'll probably go to about 6, 6:30, somewhere around there. Okay. Bullfrog says, I would start Whit over Penn all week long and twice on Sunday. Okay. One more thing, and I'll say this as far as like the stock up, stock down thing. Like when I did the stock up, stock down tweet from earlier today, I didn't list every player who's stock up, stock down, because there was a lot of people saying, well, where's Whit Weeks? Well, I'm the one with the most viral tweet about Whit Weeks being phenomenal. I was the one on AYS a few weeks ago when he asked me, hey, Carter, who's your guy? And I said, Whit Weeks. I said, Whit Weeks, even though he's a backup, is going to have a transcendent type of impact on this defense. Okay. And I went that far. I really do believe in Whit Weeks that much. All right. I didn't list every single person who had a stock up, stock down. And when I do those reports, I want it to be players that really had a breakout, right? Whit Weeks was really good. Now, do I want him starting next to Errol Perkins? That's what I would prefer. That honestly would be what I prefer. But I also think they're very similar players. And there is an extra benefit of having Greg Penn's experience out there as a year four guy compared to Whit Weeks being a year two guy. But I'm just telling you right now, when Whit Weeks is on the field, the LSU defense is better. That's just my estimation. Now, is he the absolute best box-to-box linebacker? No, right? Is he a little raw and just a freak of an athlete? Yeah, I mean, he's one of the most athletic LSU linebackers I've ever scouted. And my patrons know, like, there's 1,000 Whit Weeks high school film studies where I was like, man, I'm not sure if this guy's not like a top 50 four-star, five-star guy. And I've said it plenty of times. His high school tape is the most exciting high school tape since Leonard Fournette of any LSU recruit. Like, it really was that much fun to watch. And there was a reason why Kirby Smart really put the foot on the gas pedal to go get him. And we are very lucky to have him. I do want to roll with Greg Penn and Harold Perkins, though, because that's what we envision with this LSU defense going into this year. And let's see if they can get some chemistry and gel. And look, Whit Weeks still played a lot on defense. I think West Weeks has gotten better as well. So we'll see how this turns out. But I do think when it's all said and done, you can see a world where Whit Weeks was our most productive linebacker, off-ball linebacker this year. So, look, I've been high on Whit Weeks. I am not pushing back on Whit Weeks playing more, all right? But, you know, I would let this linebacker duo see if they can figure it out. Because overall, the LSU linebackers weren't terrible in my estimation. I don't think Harold Perkins was terrible versus USC. It's just like, look, and this is one truth that no one really wants to admit, but you think of a lot of the all-time great LSU defensive performances ever, okay? Most of those individually great, transcendent individual defensive performances came versus bad quarterbacks, okay? It is tough to have a Harold Perkins type of game like he had versus Arkansas if the other team's quarterback is competent. And obviously Miller Moss is very competent. Here's a perfect example of this, okay? Miller Moss's best throw was when Whit Weeks had a perfectly timed blitz, okay? There might be four or five other quarterbacks in college football that could have completed that in-breaker that Miller Moss made, and that should have been a big sack for Whit Weeks, okay? But it wasn't, because Miller Moss is a really, really good quarterback, right? So, look, you're going to get some big Harold Perkins games this year, but it's going to have to come against some quarterbacks that aren't as savvy as Miller Moss or aren't as good as Miller Moss. And that's why I think you need to keep Harold Perkins in there, because Lenore Sellers is the perfect type of Harold Perkins quarterback, a guy who is very athletic but can't really throw. And Lenore Sellers is used to being faster than every linebacker he faces. You're not faster than Harold Perkins. There's not a quarterback. Jaden Daniels is faster than Harold Perkins, but there's not any other quarterback that's faster than him. So he's going to run down every quarterback. And you take a look at this, UCLA's quarterback situation is also kind of tough. I think you're going to get some pretty big Perk games. And we all know how much Lane Kiffin hates scheming for Harold Perkins. So I think Perk's about to go on a run. I really do think so. Okay. Now, let's see. Let's go to a few more here. Here's Hal, one of our many patrons. Is the offensive line just not as good as we thought it was, or is this a bad game like week one last year? Okay. I will say this. All right. And we'll go too deep into this. You can go on Patreon and get my full thoughts on it, because I hate talking bad about players that I love. All right. There were some very puzzling performances on Sunday night. Okay. Very puzzling performances. Some of which were just unacceptable. It's unacceptable, right? With all the hype going into this next year. And I think if they were sitting right here, they would tell you the same thing. Now, it makes me uncomfortable saying that, because I told you that this LSU offensive line on paper is the best I've ever seen when it comes to blue chip ratio and just talent. There's two guys that will likely be first round picks, if not, no worse than day two picks, right? And there could be more. There could be more. I will tell you this, though, Hal, and I did speak to someone really in the know about this for a while today. LSU's plays were really keyed in this game on Sunday. Now, what does that mean? Okay. Well, you when you're talking about being keyed in on a play, well, that means that you kind of know what's going to happen, right? There was just too much of that. And one way you could tell if a play is keyed in is when your offensive linemen, when they pull, get put on their ass, right? You saw that happen to Garrett Dellinger. You saw that happen to Kamarion Pimpton. And part of why that happened to Kamarion Pimpton is because, well, the right side of our offensive line got pushed back so far. He then ran right into a guy who was running at absolute maximum speed to blow the play up, right? Those things happen when they know what you're going to do. And the USC defensive line knew two things. Number one, they didn't have to respect Garrett Nussmeier's run game at all. And then number two, when we pulled, we were actually going to hand the football off to our running backs instead of pull for a tight end slip like Lincoln Riley did a really good job of. We could have done more with that, ironically, instead of less. And that's where I would defend the LSU offensive line, because the play sequencing wasn't great. And it's one thing, you know, I kind of referenced, you know, going into this game, one thing that, you know, in hindsight, that's kind of interesting, Will Campbell saying, hey, we are going to run the football. I don't care what anyone says, we are going to run the football. You know, USC said, okay, cool. We're going to be ready for it. And the thing is, in this day and age, now that all these players are smart, they all have film study at the you know, at the palms of their hands with iPads and film studies and all that stuff. A lot of defenses can key in on things. There's a lot of things that get picked up. And one thing that I would also say, and this isn't any type of special intel or anything like that, you know, I don't think that, and I need to be careful how I say this, but because, you know, people will go Connor Stallion and it's crazy on it. When you see plays getting blown up, like LSU's run game was getting blown up, you do wonder if they were able to pick up on tells, right? Is there a way we were signaling in our plays? Was there a way our offensive line would flinch? Would their right hand be down on this type of play or left hand be down? Even though more offensive linemen now are just in two-point stances a lot of the times. Is there something that we were giving away? Because like D'Anton Lynn had a ridiculous staff from all different levels. You know, they have an NFL defensive line coach, they have an FCS national championship winning head coach. Lynn is from the Baltimore Ravens tree. So they know every trick in the book. And I had a discussion as well. This was actually one with Blake earlier today. I was on the phone a lot today trying to figure out what happened. And I asked Blake, as a former college offensive lineman, I said, hey, let me run a theory by you. What is the worst offensive position to play if the other team knows your plays? And we both at the exact same time said offensive line, right? If you're a quarterback, at least you can react and go to somebody else in the progression, right? If you're a running back, at least you can cut back and do something about it. As an offensive lineman, if I can at least guess what you're going to do, I could just tee off before you ever get out of your stance. I could just slant into the gap that you want to go into and you have no chance, right? Plus, defensive linemen could just be more aggressive in general because they're the first line of defense, right? If a DB knows what you're doing, you know, there's still a last third line of defense and you can't be as aggressive. That's just me just theorizing. But I do think offensive line is a terrible position if guys have a good idea what you're going to do, okay? So there you go. Now, let's take a few more here. All right, I'm going to defend the Jordan Gilbert targeting call, okay? I understand a lot of people were not happy with that call. It was a good call. I also understood Jordan Gilbert's logic. He knew if he didn't jar that football loose, that that was going to end the game, right? So it was worth flying in there and trying to get the football out. I don't think it was overly dirty either, but I understood that logic. But Jordan Gilbert was atrocious. Versus USC. Downright atrocious to where Brian Kelly even said, we need better safety play. I did have a good grade on Colin Jackson coming out. I had a borderline elite grade on Deshaun McBride Spears, okay? I think Deshaun Spears should start. That's just how I feel. He's my highest rated defensive player in this class. As close to a 9 I've gotten defensively in quite some time. A great players on a scale of 1 to 10. I think he's really good. I think he's going to be a really good safety at LSU. Now, safety has been one of the toughest positions for me to evaluate. I thought Mo Hampton was going to be good as well, and we saw what happened there. But I do think Deshaun Spears is going to be really good, and I would like to see him get more playing time moving forward. So I'm with you on that. But Jordan wasn't great. Jordan was just not great. We got to have better. But I still think he could come back and potentially give you something. Let's see. Let's go to Jared Super Chat. Carter, do you think the young guys play a lot Saturday, or do you think they play the starters more to tune up? All right. Really good question. LSU is going to steamroll Nichols. They're going to steamroll. Now, Nichols had a lot of success. This is definitely not the easiest team LSU has played in the non-conference. One thing it's been very interesting in the non-conference, non-P5 games that they've played, LSU has played a lot of bad teams that were non-conference, non-P5s, right? So even for the non-conference, non-P5s, they were bad teams. So Nichols is an okay team that's had okay success, but they are going to steamroll Nichols. One thing to keep in mind, could you see a little bit of a USC hangover here? Yes, but Brian Kelly, if there's one thing he's been excellent at, it's beating the crap out of really bad teams that are on our schedule. So I think we will be fine. I really do believe it. But could there be some hangover because of how brutal that loss was? Sure, sure. One other thing I would say. And I understand we are still hungover from this USC loss, and some of you are still hungover from your trip to Vegas. Jared might be included in that group. LSU didn't play bad versus USC. They didn't. Did they play sharp? No. Did they play with a killer instinct? No. Were we coached the best? No. But was Joe Sloan just outright atrocious as a play caller? No, he did some good things. Was Blake Baker downright atrocious as a play caller? Hell no. Were there some things else that puzzled me? Yeah. But they also made USC some phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal plays. Like downright phenomenal plays. And maybe they just have more high-end playmakers than we do in terms of guys going out there and making big-time plays, right? You know, outside of Ashton Stamps, who in the secondary continuously made big freaking plays for us? Not anyone, really. Not right now, not anyone. Okay. But as far as the young guys are concerned, Jared, yeah, I think you'll see a lot of young guys in at safety. I would like to see Deshaun Spears and Kylan Jackson out there, even though I think Jordan Allen deserves to continue to start. Who they start next to Jordan Allen, I think, will be more fascinating than anything. And I also want to get one more take out of here, okay? Outside of Savion Jones, I want to see more defensive ends get time, okay? I felt like every other end who played, I thought the new number 4, Braden Swenson, I thought he did some good things. Womack was a non-factor. Like I said, I think Zero Shan did some good things. But outside of Jones, no one was really special. And I do think there are two young ends in the wings that have potential high-end playmaking ability. And that, of course, is Gabriel Relaford and Kalaj Cobbins. Now, are they more year two guys in my estimation? Yes, they are. But I like to see them play. Maybe Dylan Carpenter, give him a shot. But, you know, I would love to see a lot of young guys get some run there. It was good to see Ahmad Bro get a lot of run. And JVR Suggs did some good things at DT as well. What's my take on CJ Daniels' deployment Sunday night? So, for those who don't know, Trey and I are big fantasy guys. And a big fantasy stat and just a big efficiency stat is yard per route run. And CJ Daniels was number one in college football last year in yards per route run. It is a very predictive stat. You can't just luck into being good at yards per route run. You just can't, okay? The truth is, we missed him on some throws. And Garrett, even though we saw him hit CJ Daniels in practice, you do have to wonder about, you know, chemistry between those two. Okay, so hopefully that grows as time moves on, but he did miss CJ on a few. At least in my estimation, he did. Now, would I like to see CJ deployed differently? I do. And I do think the Chris Hilton injury had a little bit more to do with it than we would like to think. Because the benefit of having Chris Hilton is something called the clear out route, right? And what that means is it's basically a nine, a vertical route, where you're just clearing out space for guys to run through, all right? And Chris Hilton is really good at that because he's obviously really fast. So Daniels, in many ways, started doing some of that. And look, that's fine. He's a very good deep ball receiver. But, you know, I think we get hung up on the X, Y, Z kind of things, who's playing which position. But, yeah, I don't think CJ played bad. I really don't. The truth, though, and I'm going to stick with this opinion all the way until the end. I thought Aaron Anderson was fine. I know a lot of people are saying Aaron Anderson breakout, but a lot of the plays he made were just wide open walk-in touchdowns. The guy that I truly still believe will be second on the team in receiving this year is Xavier Thomas. I still believe in the talent. I think it was clear when he got the football in his hands, there was a lot of juice. I think he has probably lost some sleep after that opening kickoff return. I don't know if I can really blame him. I'm more so give some credit to the USC guy making a ridiculous play. But I'm still a believer in CJ Daniels, still a believer in Xavion, and I was happy with what I saw out of Aaron as you know he developed and was a reliable player for us. So there you go. And Bullfrog says, I think Aaron Anderson might need to start over CJ Daniels. That is just wrong. That is just wrong. Don't get too carried away. Based off of one game, okay? And yeah, he did have a breakout game. But go through and watch the catches for yourself and say, how many of these plays were special? And once again, I'm not saying Aaron Anderson didn't have a good game. He did what was asked of him, okay? And Nuss did miss him on a rollout play. But a lot of the plays were, you know, unfreaking believably wide open. So we'll see. Once again, he did some good things. I don't want anyone to come after me for that. And he still deserves to play. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see as a larger sample rolls out and if Chris Hilton can be available. Okay? Yeah, and Deshaun Womack had one big play where he was unblocked. Other than that, non-factor. Need to get more out of that. And that's what I'm saying. Like, once again, that's not me being critical. It's just me telling you how it played out. Okay. Jared says he's recovering. All right, we'll get a few more in, and then we will skedaddle. Let's go to Sherry. Hal, I believe the defense did enough for us to win the game. That is undeniably true. And Sherry, I know it's been tough this weekend. Got an Alabama husband in the family. He's probably telling you, oh, man, we shut down TJ Finley. We're the next great thing since sliced bread. I know it's tough. I know that's tough. I couldn't imagine being married to an Alabama fan. I just couldn't. I do have it confirmed, though. I will be at the LSU-Arkansas game. Got my tickets today. Pretty excited about that. So I want to do some type of PHO meetup the night before. Obviously, on the SEC channel, I have a lot of Arkansas viewers with my Arkansas breakdowns. So I am really pumped up about Fayetteville. I love Fayetteville. A lot of my family lives up there. So I'm excited. Very excited about that. Okay. Is Durham going to play more? Yes. Yes. He should get a ton of carries on Saturday. I don't know if I want Sage Ryan at safety. I don't. They've tried it, and it's just been more the same. Not an actual game that I really tried it, but they've tried it in two spring games in a row, and it's just been not good. Now, once again, I know it's a spring game, but it wasn't good. Let's go to Taylor, super chat a little bit earlier. It sucks to lose openers, but I think we looked better last night than we did in the last 2 years. Yeah, I mean, I will be completely honest. LSU did not play bad. They did not play bad, right? There was a lot of teams in the SEC who won this past weekend. LSU played better than them, right? But we still lost, and we still had plenty of opportunities to go out there and win that game. That'll do it for me, okay? There will not be some special Nichols preview video like it was for USC. I'm not going to go do a film study on Nichols. What I will do, though, is a 5 p.m. live stream tomorrow, okay? Scott V, the Tennessee fan, is in here. T'Challa's son says, USC is better, just admit it. Why is Las Vegas, right? If the game was replayed today, I would still guess LSU would be slightly favored. Maybe USC would be slightly favored, but USC being better, I don't know if I can get there. They were the better team this past weekend. I do think they have a few more playmakers individually than LSU does, but I still think collectively LSU could have easily won that game. I don't think even the most biased USC fan could admit that. Thanks to Taylor with the super, Jackson, the super, Jared, all three of you tie for the top super chat. But the man, the myth, the legend, my dear beloved friend who I talked to on the phone as well today. I've been on the phone all day chatting LSU. Jordan with our top super chat. He drops a $10 Venmo. And I save it for the end here. The Saints over under 7.5 wins this year for the New Orleans Saints. I would lean towards the over. You know, you have a somewhat realistic shot that the Panthers just bottom out. You would like to think that Tampa is going to regress some. And, you know, you beat Tampa last year in Tampa. So let's say, like, you split those Carolina games. You do have some other games that do go in your favor. I don't think a lot of people think the Commanders are going to be good. So, look, the Saints schedule is very weird. It's also one of the easier schedules because you are in the NFC South. So I am leaning towards the Saints over. You know, you can go 8-9, which kind of feels like where the Saints team is going to be, and still get over the total. Okay. Uh-oh. The Master Blaster. What's up, dude? What's up, team? What's up? All right, Tony, I'm about to skedaddle, but if you drop a 20, I'll keep it going. Tony always drops in here bringing the heat. George, what's good, man? Am I going to any Baton Rouge home games this year? We would like to go to the Ole Miss game, but we're for sure going to the Arkansas game in Fayetteville. I would like to go to at least one home game. The wife wants to go to at least one home game, see the new lights and everything. New scoreboard. The Master Blaster. Let's take a few more here. Yeah, CJ Daniels is still going to be good for us. What happened to John Emery? Oof. Let's see here. Okay. see. I see Tyler Townsend in here. TT, what's good? Wearing your hat, bro. Good to see you. Don't forget, new Patreon podcast is up. The one guy that was shockingly tough in this game. Let's go to Kevin. Carter, I feel like these next 4 weeks, it's time to get your most talented safeties up to speed and put Perkins in the star role. Interesting. Yeah, Nate Wiggins. Yeah, and that's definitely up there. Yeah, honestly, yeah, it's probably Nate Wiggins the last 5 years. For those that don't know, he was a LSU corner that flipped to Clemson, and he's going to be pretty good for the Ravens next year. Okay, let's go to K-Mac. What's up, Carter? My son Kai and I spoke with you at the Las Vegas airport. That's awesome. I don't want to dox you, but did I tell your son to come back to me so I can give him some cards? Is that you? Okay. I'm going to say where you're from. I know people can be protective of that. But was that you, K-Mac? Okay, that was you. Well, tell your son I appreciate his support. And I always tell this to every kid I give cards. I always look at a kid in the eyes and say, are you going to do everything mommy and daddy says? And every time they lie and say yes. So my question for you, K-Mac, is has your son lived up on his end of the deal? It's only been a few days. Has your son done everything? Has it been yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, every single time? For those that don't know, every game I go to, I wear a fanny pack. And I always have cards in there. Okay, and I give it out to kids at games. All right. So a lot of the nieces and nephews of Savion Jones has a good bit of my collection. Because I brought a stack full of sports cards to the spring game, and those kids racked up on their collection. What's up, Byron? Good to see you. Want to do a meetup? Here's the thing about the PHO meetups. They always get frisky. They always get frisky, man. The last few Baton Rouge meetups we've done, I've ended up consuming a lot more than I would like to admit. And I don't even drink that much. In Vegas, I might have had like 3 or 4 drinks. Ask Jared. He was with me a good bit of the time. Didn't really do a whole lot of drinking. Had a beer or two with Jared, but that's about it. And Jared wants to get me schwasted. I don't know if I want to be schwasted around Jared. Yes, yeah, and take it off the wristband. Good. That's good. What's funny is I got to go rummage through all my stuff because I'm out of wristbands. I gave them all out. And I don't know if I should get more because people used to buy them all the time. But I don't know if there's any more room for me. I think everyone that has one at this point. Including the great Paul Skeens. He's got the PHL band. Okay. So I guess I need to get more bands just in case Paul Skeens calls me and says, hey, I need more PHL bands. Because I don't want to say, Paul, I gave him out. You got to go track down Kai and his son at the airport and go get his PHL band. Or I would force one of y'all to donate your bands to Paul Skeens if he asked for more. What sucked was when I talked to Patrick Peterson and Michael Brockers, I forgot to give them bands. I think that was a big oversight. So guess what? We will be back tomorrow night at 5, and we will see you there. It is Power Hour LSU Boom. And tonight, oh yeah, John Emery, if you're watching, I'm with you, my brother. You'll come back stronger, and you're going to take the NFL by storm. Tonight, we're doing steaks. Let's go.